My guest today is Sherry Courtland. She's returning to talk about her second book, which has recently been released. Some of you might recall when she came before, we discussed her book called Windows of Opportunity. Now, Sherry's book is new one, that is called Raising Our Vibrations for the New Age, and it contains channeled information from two guide groups about how we can raise our vibrational levels. It's about 2012, the shifting consciousness we're nearing the end of, and Atlantean, Arcturian, and Pleiadian connections. And finally, how to overcome fear in order to expedite spiritual growth. There is more, apparently, but we maybe concentrate on those subjects we've mentioned because they're very interesting. Hello, Sherry.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for having me back on your show. I can't believe it's been 2 years already.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? I didn't know until you told me that it was February 2009.
Yeah. So
that's quite amazing. But then we both know, and many of our listeners, that time is continually speeding up. And that is why I think we have interest, or a lot of interest, in 2012, because there are a number of us that believe this is the end of the cycle and the beginning of a new age. Now, it might be a good place to start talking. Tell us what your view is of 2012, or what your guide groups have told you.
Well, my guide groups have told me that 2012 is really just a date on the calendar. It's true that the Mayans calendar ends in December of 2012, but that doesn't mean that it's the end. And the Mayans, on their, in the hieroglyphics, in their pyramids, they talk about a great shift, and they talk about vibrational changes. And I think that that's what's really going on with the shift. The shift is a shift in consciousness as we go from the third dimensional energy to a fifth dimensional consciousness. Now, exactly when that shift will be complete, nobody can really say, because we're very busy evolving every single day, and there's just no way to tell exactly when the shift will be complete.
Do you possibly give to the idea that we are experiencing such a lot of light that's being beamed to the planet that it is, in fact, speeding up the raising of our consciousness levels, and that 2012 is apparently, by my understanding, the alignment of our sun with the central sun, and it appears with these alignments there's a very great inflow of energy. Now, I seem to feel that that would give us that final upliftment to make a big leap. I think some people have actually called it a quantum leap in our consciousness. So now, I can see there's a flow there, because obviously it doesn't suddenly stop one day and then restart, but how would you think about that idea that there could be a sudden upsurge in our consciousness which would sort of see us make that big jump?
Well, I think that it's entirely possible, and I think that we've had that kind of a jump before. If we go back and we look in August, I think it was August 16th, 1987, with the harmonic convergence, a couple of 100,000 people focused on peace. And they were able, just that small number of people, to raise our vibrations to the point where feelings and vibrations of peace were greater than war. And so I think that's how we averted all of the terrible predictions that you read if you go back and you read a lot of the metaphysical books that were done during the 60s, the 70s, and the early 80s. We came together, we focused on peace, and we raised our vibrations as a species. And I think that that's what all of the light workers are doing right now. We're bringing in the light. We're trying to control the amount of negative energy that we put out. We're trying to create more positive energy. And as far as your question, is there going to be a time or a date when we're going to have so many people who have reached a certain vibrational point, and then we're going to make that shift complete? I do think so, very much so. But I don't know that I can pinpoint that it's going to be December 21st, 2012.
Right. I mean, evidently, if you can use any example of how it might be. And I suppose if there is an alignment and then there's a sudden surge of energy, it could be like switching the light on, as you might say. But anyway, by and large, we seem to be very much in agreement as to what is happening now and where it is taking us. And of course, there are a lot of other people from other sources that also subscribe to that idea. Now, obviously, people listening in will be interested in other aspects of this shift in consciousness. But I was interested to read in your book, which is an excellent book again, by the way, that animals are also included in the shift. Now, a lot of people obviously have their pets, I guess largely dogs and cats, and that they are also interested whether they will be part of ascension. So what is your take on that one?
Well, some animals will shift and some animals won't shift, and that's the way that it's meant to be. The thing that I love the most that the guides talked about in this book is that when we do finally complete the shift, the world will be a vegetarian world and we won't be eating animals anymore. And to me, that's a very important thing because I love animals so much. But, you know, the guides say in the book that they know that I'm concerned about the fate of animals. And they say that animals are going to be able to adapt to the new energy frequencies. Those that are able will adapt and evolve to the next level, and then some won't. Some dogs will evolve while others won't. Some cats will evolve while others won't. And it'll be that way really throughout the animal kingdom, just like individual humans will go or they'll stay. And they tell me that animals are of a group soul and that they gain their independence and personality as they live their lives with us. And that's especially true, they say, for the animals that live with humans. Cats are cats and dogs are dogs when they're in the wild, but when they become part of the human family, they start to gain an identity and develop and evolve. And animals that don't interact with human beings, they evolve as they were intended to evolve.
Right. Yes, it's a rather unusual concept, really, to think that animals also evolve. Presumably, they move into a more higher species, if you can call it that, where the consciousness levels will increase, very much like we do when we move through the different dimensions. Now, I had to laugh when you called your guide group Gigi, which rather gives the impression that you're talking to a horse, but never mind.
I have such a great imagination, Mike. That guide group just became GG for me. What can I say?
Well, anyway, now they've told you various things about soul groups, and I'm sure people will be interested to know that they meet when they're out of the body at night. Now, my understanding is most of us, although very few have a recall of it when they wake in the morning, go out during the night time. But what can you say about these soul groups meeting? I mean, what do they do? What sort of happens?
Well, from what I understand, we do an awful lot of work at night. So after we have a good 7 to 8, 9 hours worth of sleep and we think that we should be feeling all refreshed when we wake up, sometimes we're very tired, and I think that's because we spent all night long working. And we work on different things. You know, different people have different interests, and we work on helping with world peace, and we work on helping develop cures to diseases, and we help on raising vibrations, and they're just different groups that get together and work on different things. That's my understanding anyway. I don't remember either when I wake up.
Right. That seems to really explain why people have found, to use the expression, that if they sleep on it when they have a problem, they can often wake up in the mornings and realize they found the answer.
And you know, that is so smart. I never thought of that. That makes perfect sense.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
It does.
You speak to someone when you're out of the body and discuss your problems that you bring with you. And sometimes you find the answers, but it does need you to remember. But then it may engage other people. Perhaps somebody else the next day does something that gives you the answer. So it's very interesting, isn't it, the way it all works?
It is. It is. I think that we have the opportunity when we're asleep to commune with our higher selves and to communicate more openly and more aware with our guides and those on the other side who are here to help us. You know, the higher self is something that so many of us say, oh, I wish I had that guidance. I wish I had that guidance. I wish I knew what to do. But like a GPS system, my husband has a GPS system for his car. He wanted that for so long. And now when he turns on that GPS and that little voice tells him which way to go, he doesn't think that it's the right way, and he goes the opposite direction. And I think it's that way with our higher self. Our higher self is our internal GPS, and we can listen to it. We have to tune into it and listen to it, but then we also have to take action based on what it's telling us. And that's sometimes a difficult thing to do.
Yes, I guess what happens sometimes is the little voice tells us not to do something, but we very much want to do it, so we ignore
it. Yes, that's our ego. Our ego gets in the way.
Yes, I think so. And then probably more often than not, we're doing something that's going to get us into trouble.
And then I wish I listened to that little voice.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I guess it's never too late to do something about it, but it can be at that particular instant. Now, I like the idea, and I'm sure most guides are like this, that when they talk to you, apparently, they're always smiling and happy. And as one might imagine from higher beings, there is no judgment in what they say or they do.
No, there really isn't. And with my guide groups, which are the only ones that I have experience with, really, they all have just a tremendous sense of humor, and they're very quick to tell it like it is. There's no beating around the bush, so to speak. But they do have a great sense of humor, and I'll tell you this little story. When I switched over from doing automatic writing, which is the way that I channel them, when I switched from pen and paper to the computer, and I was trying to adjust, at the end of each session, they always leave off with the words, "Go in peace." Well, for some reason, when I first started to do it, my fingers just didn't get to the right place, and the first time I typed, "Go in peach." And I thought, like the fruit, the peach, and I thought that was very funny. And now, on purpose, every time we end a session, they say, "Go in peach." There's no more "go in peace." It's always "go in peach."
That's a nice expression, isn't it?
It's very, it's our little thing, you know?
Yes, indeed, Now, I had to laugh a little bit, or should I say smile, when I think it was in the beginning of your book, you spoke about our relationship with villains. How does that come about? I mean, are we actually drawn or get involved with villains because we need a lesson that they can help us to learn?
Oh, absolutely. Mike, you know what? I got to tell you something, and this might be hard to take, but we not only have relationship villains in our life, but we are relationship villains to other people, too.
Yes.
We take turns wearing that black hat, so to speak, for each other. Mm. But relationship villains are entities who are really our closest universal friends when we're on the other side of the veil. But for this incarnation, they have volunteered really to play the role of the bad guy, so to speak, for one reason, to help us cross something important off of our spiritual must-learn list for this lifetime. So in our current lives, they might be somebody who just simply annoys us, or somebody who bullies us, or somebody that we really, really just don't like.
Right.
And they create, or they co-create, I guess is a better way to put it, unpleasant situations that open windows of opportunity for us to learn and grow so that we can take action.
Right, yes. Reading between the lines here, I guess it also means that if you come in to play these roles of villains, because it's a contract between you and someone else, you don't actually acquire any karma because of that.
Oh, well, now that is a great thing to talk about. I have not actually thought about that, but I will tell you that I'm getting confirmation right now from Gilbert and his group that what you're saying is absolutely true. that when, when, yes, that when you are working out something, you're already on a path. When we come here, we have a to-do list. We know what we want to get done. We know what we want to learn. And our relationship villains are very much here to help us learn that lesson. And we don't like them because they're forcing us to face a situation that we would rather turn away from. But until we deal with that situation properly and learn the lesson that we are intent on learning, then we're going to have to face that situation over and over and over again, kind of like a life script. But what you have just brought up is very, very important. And Gilbert is saying, you go, Mike, because that is not something that I included in the book, and it should have been there.
Trust me to pick on something that you didn't have in the book. Anyway.
It'll be in the next one, and I will credit you.
It'll be in the next one, right. Well, that's good. And you're putting there as per Mike Quincy.
Yes, I'm writing it down right now.
Oh, well, well, well. What else did I want to say about that particular subject is, yes, I have a feeling that when people get together and arrange those sort of things, probably aside from that, they're probably very, very good friends. And as soon as they pass on and move out of those roles, it's really like looking back at, say, acting, isn't it? It's as though you were involved in a play or something like that. And you play
Didn't
a villain,
Shakespeare
and then when
that?
The curtain comes down, you're all good friends again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Shakespeare said that. I don't know the exact quote, but well, all the world is a stage and we're all players. That is exactly it. We're all playing different roles.
Yes, that guy Shakespeare knew something, didn't he? About
I think he did.
Yeah, it's an excellent way to look at it, really. But I suppose when you're involved in something that's pretty difficult to learn, don't appreciate that. It seems quite real, doesn't it, when you're down here? I mean,
of course.
They say it's an illusion, but when you're in it, it doesn't seem an illusion at all.
No, it has to be that way, though, so that we can learn the lesson. So when somebody goes through a red light and back ends us, that is probably a relationship villain because a car accident is actually something that opens up an untold number of windows of opportunity for learning, not just for the two people who are involved in the car accident and the people who might be in the cars with them, but for people at the pharmacy, for people at the hospital, if that gets involved, or the ambulance and their families and their friends. There are so many windows of opportunities that are open just by somebody going through a red light and bumping into the back of you, or even something more serious. We don't like that person who does that, but, again, so many windows are open because of it.
Yes. And I suppose you have to say, when you look at it as a collective thing, when all these type of incidents are quite commonplace, it shows, really, how much the human race has to learn. And I suppose if we had more love and light in our hearts and we were more in harmony and balance with other people, there would be less and less need for villains.
You have hit the nail on the head, Mike, because if we treat other people and our planet, I got to throw that in, the way that we want to be treated, then everything changes. Everything changes. We have a huge outpouring of positive energy. We're able to attract more light and hold more light on the planet. We're spewing out less negative energy that way. And that will precipitate the time when we will actually complete the shift.
Hmm. What do you think happens to those souls who, for some reason or another, find themselves sort of unable to grasp the truth about the purpose of light and perhaps in different lives don't actually seem to change their level of evolution?
Well, at one point in time, I wanted to shake those people and say, wake the heck up and get with the program. But now, after having spent, you know, these last couple of decades with my guides and doing this work, I know that we can't judge those people because they have their own set of things that they have to do. light workers have to live their regular lives. They've got to deal with their karma. They've got to learn their lessons. They've got to have their experiences. But light workers have a bigger job also. They've got to help push humanity up the evolutionary ladder to the fifth dimensional consciousness. But not everyone on this planet is a light worker. Not everyone has the same agenda. And there are many, many souls here who need the third dimensional energy to complete whatever it is that's on their to-do list. So I think it's more than okay that not everybody is going to make the shift, and more than okay that not everyone believes the way that we do.
No, because behind all of our decisions is our free will choice, isn't it?
It's our free will choice, and also our free will choice really about the things that we want to learn. And some things are just more easily learned. Well, I don't want to say more easily learned. They're difficultly learned in a third dimensional energy, but you need that third dimensional energy in order to learn particular lessons.
Right. Now, so often with my guests who are on a similar path to yourself, I've heard this understanding of fear expressed, which in your book you term it as what we think is what we get. Now, explain
yes.
that to people, because they would think that if they feared something, that it would be the very last thing they would get.
Well, we are very, very powerful, and one of the reasons this second book was written is so that we can understand our power. We're very, very powerful entities, and what we put our attention on and what we put our intention on is very much what we're going to get. And our thoughts are almost as powerful now as our words, and there's going to come a time when our thoughts are going to instantaneously produce things. That's how it will be when we finally shift to the fifth dimension. But as we're getting there, our thoughts are more powerful, more powerful, more powerful. And if we're afraid of flying, and that's all we talk about is being afraid of flying, we will continue to be afraid of flying. If we're afraid that the world is going to end on December 21st, 2012, we're going to live in this terrifying fear, and there's just no reason for it. We need to face our fear, and when we face our fear and we embrace our fear and we recognize where it's coming from and we move on from it, that's how we grow. And that fear no longer has hold of us.
Yes. I recall in your book you actually use the expression about neutralizing fear.
Yes.
I mean, if someone, say, had a fear of flying, take that as an example, how would they neutralize it? What did you have in mind with that expression?
Well, they would have to face it. They would need to get on a plane and face that fear. And then they would see that there's nothing to be afraid of. That's
right.
The only thing that you can do. You've got to neutralize fear. You've got to face the fear, and you've got to move past it. And then you're free. That's what frees you.
Because I think some people, if they had, again, to take that example, a fear of flying, might well go to a regression hypnotist who may track
yes.
something back in their previous lives that is still in their subconscious, which causes them to fear that. Now, how would they deal with that?
Well, you know what, I agree with you totally, but I would think that anyone who would go as far as hypnotherapy or even just with a regressionist and figure out that it comes from a past life, that this fear emanates from something that happened in a past life, would then logically be able to recognize that this is something from the past, recognize that, and then try to move on from it here. And then in so doing, they would not have to worry about this fear in future incarnations. To face it here, maybe that's one of the reasons why they're having this incarnation. Maybe that's one of the things on their to-do list. I don't know. Only an individual can meditate on this and listen to their higher self and really figure out what their lessons are. But it would seem to me that if it's something that we're carrying over from lifetime to lifetime, until we face it and move on from it, it's something that we're going to have to deal with in the future. And who wants to carry something like that on for lifetime after lifetime?
Now, most people, I think, who listen to these type of programs love to hear stories about ETs. Do I recall correctly, was it you that was visited by ETs when you were 5 years old?
Yes, it was. And my gosh, just thank you so much for bringing that up. One of the things that I definitely did not want to put in the book was about the ET visitations, but I was very much directed to do so by my guide group. Apparently when I was very young, when I was born, I decided that I did not really want to be here. Something must have changed to where I just wasn't going to be able to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish, or I felt that way, and I just wanted to go home. I wanted to go home. And so suddenly I had mice friends, all of these mice friends that I thought were living under my bed. And what I found out later, I know, right? What I found out later was that actually I was being visited by ETs who were sort of giving me therapy and trying to get me to stay in body so because it would be too difficult for me to go back to the other side, find another set of parents, and do everything that I needed to do in a timely manner. I really needed to stay where I was, and I needed to push past whatever it was that was making me want to go home. So I got to have a little galactic therapy, and my mind, as a human being, I guess, kind of covered the whole ET thing with mice. But in reading a lot of ET books, I see, like, especially with Whitley Strieber, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, a lot of people have interactions with ETs where they feel like they've seen animals like owls and different things like that.
Mm. Right. So do these two things link together? Are your spirit guides also actually ETs, or are they something, or just purely spiritual people, if there's such a thing?
I feel like the planet Earth and the people of Earth, when we finally do complete this shift to the fifth dimension, we're going to kind of step up and take our place galactically. And I don't, extraterrestrials, okay, ET, extraterrestrial, so somebody from another planet. Well, Aknanda, who is one of the guides who channeled information for this book, he told me that he is from Arcturus. So that's his home planet is Arcturus. So definitely he would be considered to us an ET. Now, Jeremy and Gilbert, I don't know. I've never asked them. I'm going to have to ask them where their planet of origin is. I'm not sure. Now, I'm told by Aknanda and my guide group that Arcturus is actually my place of origin as well. Mm. And that's something that I have heard from different psychics, even before I was talking with guides and being able to do automatic writing, but just going to psychics, psychic after psychic told me that. And I always thought that was the craziest thing, you know, to hear. But after so many years of hearing it, I figured, well, there must be something to it. And now the guides have made me write it in this book, so now I'm really out of the closet.
Right. And I think in that connection, you mentioned something about an Arcturian way station. What is that?
Yeah, well, hearing so much about Arcturus, I wanted to do some research on Arcturus. And one of the things that I found is that Arcturus is actually a way station for the people of Earth, in that before we come into body here on the planet Earth, we kind of make a pit stop on Arcturus, where we're kind of prepped for our upcoming lifetime. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So I guess the people of Arcturus are kind of like social workers, in a way.
Yeah. Well, I think that's very nice. Yes, I've read other books about Arcturians, and there are other people that channel the Arcturians, so... For those of us who read that sort of stuff, we're quite familiar with this. Now, was it the Arcturians that told you about parallel worlds and gave you a bit of information?
You know, I'm not sure off the top of my head where the information from parallel worlds came from. Someone probably channeled something about it, and then I just started to research it and see what was up with it. What are you thinking with regard to the parallel worlds?
Well, I think if people have heard of it, and they don't understand what the relevance is, because parallel worlds seem to indicate that the two are connected or aspects of each other. So can you throw some light on that?
Well, it's really a mind-boggling thing when you start to think about parallel universes. And, you know, many people say that if you make a decision, there are two ways to go when you have a choice. You're going to do A or you're going to do B, or maybe there's even a C choice. And with each decision you make, a kind of a new universe is created. And I've tried to think about that long and hard, and it's a very difficult thing to think about for a long time without getting a headache, I think. But the whole thing about parallel universes, there are actually scientists who have done a lot of research about parallel universes. And I don't think it's something that is very far off the radar anymore. And, I think I'm just looking here in the book just to see what it was that might have spurred me about this. And I see that Gilbert talked about people transitioning and that other people have transitioned. And so I thought, well, what about these American Indian tribes that kind of just disappeared, like the Anasazi, they were one, and the Mayans kind of just disappeared. Yeah, and, there are others. So where did they go? Did they go to a parallel universe? But, from what I understand and from my guides, and I've read this in other people's books too, and I was really glad when I did, because then I kind of felt like I had confirmation. The way that the shift is going to occur is really going to be kind of a parallel universe or a parallel Earth thing, where the fifth dimensional Earth is going to kind of pull away from the third dimensional Earth. And we're still going to kind of inhabit the same space, but one will be at an uptick in frequency at the fifth dimensional level of energy, while the third dimensional Earth will still be here for those who need it. What do you think about that?
I have heard some people suggest that parallel worlds are, if there's a simple explanation, one is antimatter and one is matter.
Yes.
And so on that basis, they are identical, I would say. So that maybe means that we have an aspect on both worlds. And I know in your book you actually spoke about many aspects of ourselves. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, there just are many aspects of ourselves, because we are, how do I say this? We're like a projection of our higher self, and our higher self knows what our mission is. Our higher self knows what we need to accomplish for overall learning for our soul. So let's just say that our higher self is our soul. We can have one aspect of our higher self here, or we can have several aspects of our higher self here. So it's very possible, Mike, that you and I have other aspects of our higher selves running around on planet Earth, but not only just on planet Earth, but maybe on other planets as well. Just, soaking up, think about it, just soaking up the knowledge and having the experiences. And you know what? Why not? Why not? Because then you get a lot more done in a shorter amount of time.
Yes, I mean, it's a bit mind-blowing, really, isn't it? Especially for people who are in their early stages of understanding. I think that's a few jumps ahead. Maybe we don't have to worry too much about the ins and outs of that. But nevertheless, it's an interesting subject.
Well, you can't talk about parallel. I'm sorry, go ahead. You can't talk about parallel universes.
You want to describe more about the parallel worlds?
Well, you can't talk about them without talking about the multiverse and quantum physics, and I got to tell you, that stuff is really beyond me in this current incarnation. But I did a little research, and I know that back in 1954, there was a Princeton University doctoral candidate. His name was, I think, U. Everett, and he came up with an idea, a really radical idea back then in 1954, that parallel universes exist that are exactly like our universe, and that they're all related to ours, and that they branch off from ours, and that our universe is branched off of others. And, for somebody working on their doctorate at Princeton to put that out there, that's really interesting, because you would not think that in 1954 that would be a popular thing to talk about, and you might be called crazy. But then, Einstein, I mean, he had similar thoughts also, and they did something called imagined experiments or thought experiments to try and test the theory, because there's no way to know, really. There's no way to test that theory except through thought or imagination. And I was really interested to see that we have experiments that are just imagined experiments. That to me is mind-blowing also.
Right, yes. I think this all revolves around the fact that everything is connected, that what we do on the planet Earth, in fact, has an effect on other planets in this universe. So we're linked in a way, maybe, that we don't truly understand. It probably goes back to what you said, that we are, as individuals, very powerful people, but we don't realise, I suppose, the full extent to which that power goes.
No, but as we start to focus in on our words and pay attention to them and our thoughts and our actions, we will see really just how powerful we are. I mean, it only took 200,000 people focusing on peace to put an end to the horrible, horrible predictions for what we were going to have to go through to make this shift. Only 200,000 people. It's kind of like the 100th monkey effect. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, when is the shift going to happen? When the 100th monkey effect kicks in. When enough people have hit that certain frequency so that we can all make that shift.
Yes, that makes sense. And I think I've heard that idea expressed before. Isn't it a pity that we can't get together and bring that about? But I suppose as the levels of consciousness increase, we might be well getting nearer to creating a new environment or a new situation for ourselves.
Oh, we are. It seems very slow to us, but from the other side, you know, Gilbert tells me that we're getting standing ovation after standing ovation for the work that's being done over here. We are taking humankind, to a new level of consciousness, and it's never been done before. You know, the thought was that it would be done back in the Atlantean times, and I think that the Atlanteans came quite close to doing it. But I think that the unfortunate part in what happened with the Atlanteans was that they were not balanced. Their level of spirituality did not balance out with their level of technology. And let's face it, they were a little bit warlike. They liked to take over. They like to take over other continents. They like to take over other people. They wanted to be top dog on the planet, and eventually they destroyed themselves, and they destroyed an entire continent on planet Earth.
Right.
You know, had their level of spirituality matched their level of technology, I think that we wouldn't be sitting here today having this conversation, because humankind would already probably be working on going to the next level, whatever that is, above the fifth dimension.
Right. Well, I think we must have done wonderfully well, because what knowledge we do have of our history would actually show that the human race has been a very barbaric race.
Absolutely.
And in the Dark Ages, they must have really plumbed the depths of barbarity and evil, or whatever word you like to use. So it must be quite an achievement to get to where we are today.
Yeah, we had to go all the way back to the beginning after Atlantis and start all over again. And, you know, let's face it, we are a warlike people. We just are. And we have to try. I don't know whether that's the third dimensional energy that makes us that way, because certainly we're not that way when we're in spirit, you know, but there just has to be something about this third dimensional energy. And that's our job. We have to overcome it. And we've done, I think, remarkably well. I mean, we could have gone the way of Atlantis for sure, but we had the whole Hiroshima thing. If we did not put the brakes on that, it could have been Atlantis all over again.
Right.
Right,
yes,
but we did wake up.
Totally believe that. Now, I notice in your book you indicate that people have already made their decisions as to whether they engage in the shift or not. So
yes.
I suppose that information ought to rest people's minds who are very worried as to whether or not they will rise up, because if the decision has already been made, presumably before they come into this life, it must mean to me that they've already made the appropriate decision.
Yes, absolutely, the appropriate decision for them. And that is such a key point to make, Mike. I'm so glad that you said that, because the way that I understand it, there is no shame in not transitioning to the fifth dimension as a human being, because when we are out of body, we are well beyond that anyway. This is just an evolutionary thing for humankind to go to the fifth dimension. When we're out of body, we're spirit. But there are people, entities, that need the third dimensional energy to complete what they need to complete. And there are people who could very well make the shift now, but they're not going to do it because they're going to stay behind to help those who are still working in the third dimensional energy to accomplish what they need to accomplish and then be able to transition later. There is absolutely, positively no shame, and there should be no judgment. No one should walk around saying, I'm going to the fifth, and you're not. Ha, ha, ha. That is a horrible, horrible thing.
Absolutely.
There should be no judging. That is nothing but negative energy and ego.
Right. Now, your book is exceptionally good value because you include a free meditation CD, which is an Arcturian meditation. So
yes.
Tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Well, you know, it's a very funny thing. I was speaking at a conference in Arkansas, Dolores Cannon's conference, and I was very much attracted to a piece of moldavite that a vendor had at their booth, and I thought to myself, I don't really need any more moldavite. I love moldavite, and I've always used moldavite to help myself connect. But I thought, I don't need another piece of moldavite. But this moldavite kept calling me and calling me and calling me. So finally I bought it. I came home. I was sitting outside under an oak tree in my front yard, and I pulled out that piece of moldavite just to do some meditation. And I thought that I was all done writing Raising Our Vibrations for the New Age. I thought I was all finished and about to just kind of organize it and do the finishing stuff, when all of a sudden during that meditation, Aknanda of the Arcturians kind of introduced himself to me, and when I say that, that's in my mind. He didn't really kind of walk up and sit down next to me, although who knows, maybe he did. And he started talking about our galactic connection, and he wanted to very much to include a chapter about our galactic connection in the book. And then, because Arcturus is such a way station, so connected to planet Earth, he wanted to give us some meditations that we could use to help us complete our to-do list faster, to help us grow faster spiritually, and also to help us acclimate to the fifth dimensional energy. Because, you know, so many of us right now, we're not 100% third dimensional, and we're not 100% fifth dimensional. We're very much in between, which is why so many people are having a lot of health problems and mental challenges, because we're in between in this transition. Mm-hmm. So that's what that is. And when he dictated those, I thought to myself, how can anybody ever sit and read that or memorize that and be able to do this meditation or the visualization? And so I just took it upon myself, even though I do not have the kind of voice to be doing a CD, I thought, well, let me just throw this down on a CD so that people can just pop it in and then be able to work on raising their vibrations and moving ahead spiritually.
Mm. Very good. Yeah, I think that's very, very useful indeed. Now, you do have a lot of information about crystals for healing, that type of thing, a bit of information about chakras, and you say what we eat matters. Explain that in terms of what is best to improve our levels of spirituality or the health of our body.
It's all about vibrations. You know, I'm a vegetarian, and I'm an animal rights activist, and it just makes me cry when I think about people eating animals, but That said, I've been told very clearly by my guide groups that those animals do understand when they are coming into body that this is what their role is on this planet in this energy. To me, that doesn't necessarily make it right. I think that there's enough things to eat that we don't have to do that. But what we put in our body does make a difference vibrationally. When you're eating meat, when you're eating animals, you're ingesting everything that's in that animal. You're ingesting that horrific fear that they had when they were murdered for your meal. That's going into your body, and I'm not going to get off on a lecture about vegetarianism. That is something that I will never do. That is a free will thing. But also, you know, people, when they're raising these animals, they tend to pump them full of different chemicals, and those chemicals are going directly into your body. Now, the same thing could be said of vegetables also coming from a farm, which is why you want to make sure that you wash everything. And I asked about organic food, and is that something that we should go to? And the guide group said, you know, yes, organic would be better, but they're also very pragmatic, my guide groups, and they recognize that organic food is crazy expensive.
Mm.
And they say, well, maybe if you can do a little bit, a few plants in your backyard or on your porch or something to have a little bit of organically grown vegetables, that would be a good thing. That would help. And just try to eat as fresh as you can and things that have the least amount of chemicals as you possibly can. That's
right.
Something that you can do to help raise your vibrations and help you not become sick quite so easily.
Right. What would you say to people that don't eat red meat or, say, even white meat as such, but enjoy fish, and probably would tell you that there is a lot of goodness and oils in fish that are beneficial?
Well, it's not very beneficial to the fish. I agree. Omega-3, is that what's in fish oil? You know, my own husband takes omega-3, and I cringe every time I see him do that, and he's not vegetarian and he eats fish, but again, that's a free will thing. I think that there are other ways to be healthy and other ways to get our vitamins and minerals. I think that we are long past the point where we need to kill living things in order to go on. And you know, I'm going to say this: there are people on this planet who become very incensed when they think about the fact that there are folks in Korea who will butcher and eat a dog for dinner. That seems very wrong to them. In Peru, they eat guinea pigs, right? But those are pets here. Please tell me who decided that a dog was more important than a cow, or that a guinea pig was more important than a chicken. Who has made these decisions that these animals could and should die for food, but these other animals, oh no, that's a sin against nature, you can't eat them? I would like to know who made those differentiations.
I suppose you can only go back so far, and it's always been the traditional sort of foodstuffs these different people eat, and I suppose they've never really questioned it.
Well, you know, there might have been a time when, you really had no choice in order to survive, and maybe we had to turn to eating meat, but at that point I think that we were probably hunters and gatherers, and we weren't stuffing chickens, 1,000 chickens into a little room and torturing them for eggs or torturing them for food. And, the same thing for cows. I think our treatment of animals is what makes me very, very upset. You know, if you must eat meat, and again, I'm not going to argue that point with anyone. I think that free range would be the way to go. Yeah, it's harder to get and it costs a little bit more money, but at least it's more humane to the animal, and that's something that I would think that human beings would want to take into consideration.
Yes, indeed, I'm sure you're right, but I suppose it does follow that as people raise their vibrations, their liking for these foodstuffs that are of a heavier vibration starts to lose its appeal, doesn't it? Because
it
doesn't fulfill what they really need anymore.
Yes, I think that that's very true. And, you know, I've seen that in myself when I first became a vegetarian, and that was like 25 years ago. I was reading a magazine, and there was an advertisement in there that talked about veal calves and the treatment of veal calves. And I just broke down crying. I remember going into the bathroom so that nobody would see me crying. And I never touched meat again after that. But just because I didn't touch meat doesn't mean that I was eating healthy, because I was still eating cake and cookies. And that's not necessarily good for you either. But, you know, as I've gone along over the years, cake and cookies do not have the same appeal to me anymore as a nice fresh apple or an orange or something like that. So I do think that you're right. I think the more that we go along vibrationally, our tastes do change. And I, again, am very much looking forward to when we do make the shift and everyone is a vegetarian.
Yeah. I know you, at some stage in your life, I don't know whether it's actually ever stopped, you did apparently study the use of herbs.
Yes, I did. I had the honor of taking a course given by Rosemary Gladstar, who, I mean, to me, she's just Mother Nature herself. And I did that because I was very tired of doctors trying to just cover up symptoms when I would go to the doctor. You know, take this pill, take that pill, take this pill, giving you three pills at one time. And those things kind of change your personality, and I don't think that's very good for raising your vibrational level. And so I really wanted to learn about and to try and address the underlying cause of an illness and try to treat that underlying cause instead of treating the symptoms. And that's when I started to study herbalism. And then I went on also to the Clayton College of Natural Health, and I studied naturopathy. Just for myself, I don't practice, but just so that I could help myself.
Right, yes, and I suppose the plus point, if you have good knowledge of herbs, is that if you're a good cook, you can involve them in your cooking, and you can make some of your food stuff very tasty.
Yes. I mean, you know, rosemary, basil, those things are very tasty. Now, golden seal tastes like dirt. It's liquid dirt, but I will tell you, if you have a bladder infection, there is nothing better than a couple of teacups full of golden seal tea to help eradicate that from your body, but it's like drinking liquid dirt.
It won't appeal to people. Now, Sherry, because we're having such an interesting conversation, as usual, the time is whizzing by, so I'll give you a couple of minutes to tell our listeners your website address or any other quick information that you'd like to convey to them.
Okay, well, let me start with this. If you would like to raise your vibrations, there are five steps to higher vibrations. I'm going to give you this without even reading the book that Gilbert, my guide, says that you can do. First, watch what you think, watch what you say, and watch what you do. Second, stop judging other people. That will decrease negative energy output. Three, be positive in the face of adversity. That decreases negative energy. Think relationship villains here. Step number four, look for ways to bring light to the planet, and you can do that by stopping gossiping, stop being rude, don't look for underlying insults in what other people say to you, and look for ways to be nice to people. And the most important thing that you can do to help raise your vibrations and others, smile. It has a huge vibrational punch.
Okay. That's a good place to stop you, telling people to smile. I think no one can resist a smile. Would you like to give our listeners, finally, your web address so they know where
please.
To go?
Thank you. www.sherrycortland.com, and you can download free chapters of both of my books at www.sherrycortland.com.
Brilliant. And that's Sherry spelled S-H-E-R-R-I, and not a Y.
Not a Y, it's
anyway.
An I.
Thank you, Sherry. It's been very interesting speaking with
you. Thank you so much for having me on your show, and I guess I hope to see you when I have my next book out.
Well, yes, indeed. Let me know. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next week, with a bit of luck, I haven't had a reply yet, my guest should be Cal Corey, who's just written a new book called The Healing Powers of Honey. I'm sure that'll interest a lot of people. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.